All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome in to the Rockies Insider. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons. On the first day of the postseason here, October 1st, happy postseason to all those who celebrate. Chances are, if you're listening to this, you might not be celebrating as you're a fan of the Colorado Rockies, who have six consecutive years without a postseason berth. Nevertheless, there are still plenty of Rockies kicking around the playoffs for various teams. I'll run down that list of players and coaches who used to don the purple pinstripes here in Denver. We'll talk a little bit about what's happened at the end of the season for the Rockies, because we've got all offseason to talk about it, but it's still really fresh. It's still really relevant. Some of the numbers that players put up, both positives and both negatives, we'll break that down. And naturally, we'll talk about the passing on Monday of 83-year-old Pete Rose. Not Hall of Famer Pete Rose, the hit king Pete Rose. Most hits all time, 4,256. But let's go ahead and do a little recap of a couple of players for the 2024 Colorado Rockies. And Ezekiel Tovar is the first one, I think, for me that comes to mind, finishing this season fairly strong with 26 homers, 45 doubles, and that's something that only a small group of players in their age 22 season have ever accomplished. Only A-Rod and Cal Ripken Jr. were ever able to do that in their age 22 season. So that is definitely rarefied air. Hall of Famer Hank Greenberg also did that a ways back. We've seen more recent players like Miguel Cabrera, Albert Pujols, Rafael Devers was the last one to do that. So 75 extra base hits is definitely nothing to turn a blind eye to, because that's really special. That's elite. Over on X, I did put out a snapshot of Troy Tulowitzki's age 22 season in 2007 and Ezekiel Tovar's age 22 season in 2024. And while Tovar is kind of close, there's obviously was a much different dynamic in 2007 with Tulo, where the Rockies were going for the postseason in that year with the late run. And so obviously those games were a lot more relevant for the Rockies and for Troy Tulowitzki, more pressure-packed situations. We could also argue that Ezekiel Tovar on a 100-loss team was always facing better players on better teams. That being said, yeah, Tulo had the better season in 2007, but I don't think Tovar was that far behind. And I think in a different environment in which the Rockies were a bit more relevant and the Rockies weren't a 100-loss club and were closer, a little bit closer to being a 500 club, which is what the 2007 Rockies were before finishing out their season on that incredible run, I think we can go ahead and say that, yeah, you know, Tovar definitely did some Tulo-type things. Buddy seems to think that Tovar is going to end up winning the Gold Glove Award at shortstop. Brendan Doyle is a no-doubter, probably has a good chance of winning the Platinum Glove Award for best overall defender in the entirety of the National League. But for shortstops, there's not too many out there defensively that had as good of a year as Ezekiel Tovar, who only made 8 errors. Between these last 2 years, made a combined 15 errors. So he's been really, really incredible on the defensive side, on the offensive side. Tovar also did finish the year with 200 strikeouts. He becomes the first ever Colorado Rocky with 200 strikeouts. And I'm really glad that he hit that mark. I'm really glad. It's just like with the Rockies losing 100 games. Rip off the Band-Aid. There's nothing wrong with losing 100 games if you are a rebuilding club and you've got nothing to play for and you want to cast off some pieces that you're not going to really be able to utilize in the future when you're relevant, trade those players and get better for the future. The Rockies did that a lot more so in 2023 than 2024 in those 100 loss seasons. And for Ezekiel Tovar, big deal. You struck out 200 times. You're a high strikeout player. That is something that needs to be worked on, not just for Tovar, but for a lot of the Colorado Rockies. The entire team needs to have a different approach to putting the ball in play. But he went out and played those games. Numbers be damned, he played those games. Compare that to last year when Ryan McMahon, down the stretch, over the final week or so of the season, he was not being put in the lineup by manager Bud Black for what I believe is fear of striking out 200 times, which is still somewhat of a rarity. It's common. We accept that. Yeah, hey, that's not great. That's a bad milestone. But it's probably worse if you're not just going out there and playing. And so Tovar finishes with 157 games played. I like that number a lot more than I dislike the 200 strikeouts. So not a big deal that he struck out 200 times, most in a single season for any member of the Colorado Rockies. Not a big deal. Michael Tolia, 25 homers, 10 stolen bases, also out there on Threads and on X. He's in a rarefied air, only 33 first basemen being 90% of your games were at first base. Only 33 ever had 25 homers and at least 10 steals. The last one to do that a few years ago was Paul Goldschmidt, the only player to ever do it in less than 400 at-bats, Michael Tolia. So he got there fairly quickly. So good for him. That's definitely a lot to build on. Ended up finishing out, I want to say, the final 102, 103 games of the season had Michael Tolia in the lineup every single time. Something like 90-plus games at first base as well. So he is the first baseman of the future. There's no other discussions about that going forward. So he's another one of those names that you can write in safely and feel good about going into 2025. How does Tolia, how does Tovar, how does Doyle, how do all of these young players respond next year when there could be a little bit more pressure on them, especially if they're going to be around 500 going into the trade deadline and wins and losses become a lot more important and small situations within a game, advancing a runner, throwing to the right base, hustling out on a play, backing up a base. All of those little things are going to be even more critical next year when you're trying to snap this 6-year sub 500 run that you're currently on. So that will be interesting to see how those young guys respond next year. And we'll have plenty more to talk about this offseason with them. But the big news on Monday was the passing of Pete Rose, 83 years old. Pete Rose has an incredible baseball reference page. Make sure you take a moment to go there and look. The all-time leader in base hits, 4,256, toppled Ty Cobb's record, which was believed to be almost impossible to take down. 24 years in the majors. Most games played by any player, Pete Rose. Pete Rose played more games in the majors than any other of the 23-plus thousand players in MLB. Most plate appearances, most at-bats. At 22 years old, was the 1963 National League Rookie of the Year. 10 years later, at age 32, he was the 1973 National League MVP. 15 times he received an MVP vote. 17 times he was selected to the All-Star team. He won 3 World Series rings with 2 different franchises, was the MVP of the World Series as well. 321 batting average in 67 World Series games, had a 44-game hit streak, longest in National League history, longest since Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hit streak in 1941. Is the last player manager. That's right. He was the manager and he was a player simultaneously for the Cincinnati Reds. We will never see that again. Had the nickname of Charlie Hustle. Now, the origins of that nickname are not as cool as the nickname might sound, because Charlie Hustle has a ring to it. It sounds really special, and it is. But Charlie Hustle was a negative connotation. It was a nickname that Mickey Mantle actually gave to Pete Rose during a spring training game, in which I believe Mantle hit a ball about 500 feet in Florida that was a no-doubter, and Pete Rose ran back to the fence to try to climb up and catch it, and it was miles away. And after the game, Mickey Mantle said, "Who is that Charlie Hustle out there in right field?" That's Pete Rose. He played that hard. He dove head first with a veracity like we just don't see anymore. In an all-star game, in an exhibition, he ran over catcher Ray Fosse and altered his career, separated his shoulder, did damage to that man, trucking him at home plate in an all-star game. The game was a lot more about pride back then, but even still, think about that. Think about how wild that is in an all-star game to be taking the catcher out. That was Pete Rose. He played 100%. He ran to first base on walks. That's Charlie Hustle. That's the hit king. But there's another side to Pete Rose, and that other side is the one that has tarnished that great legacy that I just ran through. Because Pete Rose has been banned from baseball and continues to be banned from baseball because he bet on baseball. That is the cardinal sin of any professional sport, but particularly for baseball. The 1919 Black Sox scandal. Chicago White Sox, they gambled, they bet on the World Series, they threw the game. They were called the Black Sox because they played for the Chicago White Sox, and the owner, Charlie Comiskey, was so cheap that he would charge players to do their laundry. So they said, "Fine, we're not even going to wash our socks. We'll play with these Black Sox because, look, we're so underpaid and we are not supported by our owner." So they became the Black Sox because they had to do their own laundry and they weren't going to do it because it was going to cost them. So in order to make a couple extra bucks, they threw the World Series. And since that day, every spring training, one of the few things, there's many things that get discussed each and every spring training in every single clubhouse, but the one thing that has been discussed, one of the most important things that gets discussed in each and every clubhouse, each and every spring training, is you cannot bet on baseball. We live in a different world now, obviously in 2024, where sports betting is rampant and there are now new rules in the CBA that allow players to bet on some other sports, but you can't bet on baseball. And Pete Rose bet on baseball. He was the manager. He made the lineup. There's a very poor argument out there by some folks who say, well, Pete only bet on his team to win. And that's what Pete said. And I 100% believe that that is true. And I guess in a vacuum, that's fine. You bet on your team to win. So what's the harm in that? The problem is, and the harm is, any day in which Pete Rose did not bet on his team to win was an indicator that he didn't think his team was going to win that day. And any decisions that he made in that game could have negatively impacted his team and positively impacted the other team and positively impacted the sports book or the gamblers. So you can't bet on your team to win just to win because it sends the wrong message. You can't bet on baseball. And Pete Rose did. Unfortunately, he wasn't contrite at all. A. Bartlett Giamatti banned him, unfortunately passed away soon after. But Pete had opportunities to come back to baseball. Pete had a lot of chances to make things right. I think that's the saddest part when the news came down yesterday that Pete Rose had passed away. Also a player that a pair of my uncles, that they grew up watching Pete Rose play, and he was one of the best players. And they idolized him amongst other players. But Pete Rose was one of their guys. You could not watch baseball in the 60s and 70s and even early 80s and not say, you know, Pete Rose was one of the best players in the game. I think the saddest part was that I don't think Pete really ever came to grips with his actions. I don't know if he was a narcissist. I don't know if he just couldn't accept the choices that he made and admit that he was wrong and that he made a poor choice. But he had chances. He had some opportunities. You know, I think baseball wanted to bring him back, but they needed Pete to show some contrition. They needed Pete to really show the resolve that, you know what, I need to change. I did make a mistake. Let me go about my business differently. In 1999, there was the All-Century team at Fenway Park, the greatest players of all time. Everybody voted on it, and Pete Rose was selected as one of those greatest players and was able to show up at Fenway Park. And then only a couple years later, in a secret meeting with the then commissioner, Bud Selig, former teammates Mike Schmidt and Joe Morgan came to Pete's defense, got Pete and Bud Selig in the same room and said, how can we lift this ban from baseball? How can we get Pete Rose on a veterans committee ballot? Because he's clearly one of the greatest baseball players of all time. No one is doubting that. Pete Rose is represented in the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, but he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's in the and museum part of the Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown. You can see plenty of Pete there, but you just don't see his plaque anywhere in the proper Hall of Fame. So they have the meeting, and all Pete has to do is apologize and say that, yeah, I admit to this crime and I bet on baseball, apologize to those he betrayed, promise he would never do it again, stop gambling. And he almost immediately turned around and he headed directly for an appearance at a sports book in Las Vegas. That was it. That was the end. I think you saw him once in a while on some Fox Sports broadcasts, pregame, postgame, in the postseason. He had a lot to offer in terms of baseball, but he also had even more to offer baseball players around the world as a lesson that you don't bet on baseball. And if you do happen to make a mistake, you have to own it. You have to own it. There's a conversation that should happen. I look forward to having this talk with a lot of other really great baseball people that I'm friends with and have good working relationships with about the difference between Pete Rose being kept out of the Hall of Fame and players who use performance-enhancing drugs during the 90s and early 2000s. And I think that they are very different situations. I think there's obvious similarities in, you know, saying that someone made a poor choice. I think there are those similarities. But there are also major differences as well. I think 1A is doing something that's illegal, and then 1B, doing something that's not allowed by baseball. Pete Rose gambled, and that was a rule at the time that you could not, and it will remain a rule, you cannot bet on baseball. He broke both those laws. He did both of those things. Whereas as far as the PED players are concerned, sure, they did illegal drugs. According to the United States government, they were legal. But 1B, there were no rules saying that you could not use PEDs up until the mid-2000s. That was a loophole that was left in there intentionally by baseball, by Commissioner Bud Selig, because it was good for business. There was a strike and a lockout. We had no World Series in 1994. We had a delayed start to 1995. First game ever at Coors Field was played by scabs, were played by replacement players. Yankees and Red Sox played in late March of 1995. Wasn't Larry Walker there? Wasn't Dante Bichette? Wasn't Don Mattingly? None of those players played in that game because of the black eye that baseball was going through because of a strike in 94 and then a lockout in 1995. And because of that, a lot of people said, I'm never going to another game again. This sport is all about money. Well, all sports are all about money, but it broke your heart, and your response was to make sure you never got your heart broken again. And right after that, we had Cal Ripken Jr. with his consecutive games played streak, and we had McGuire and Sosa hitting all those home runs, and a lot of people started coming back to the ballpark. A lot of people said, you know what? A lot of time has gone by. Some of my wounds have healed. There are still scars, but I love this game, and I'm willing to give it another try. And they fell in love with the game again. And Barry Bonds, everywhere he went, you had packed houses for people trying to catch his home run balls, trying to see a player that was doing things that we hadn't seen since Babe Ruth. And that was all allowed because Major League Baseball turned a blind eye to steroid use. That's the big difference between Pete and those players that use PEDs. I think both should be punished in different ways. And I think both have been punished. I don't think there's any way to have any resolution for Pete Rose, unfortunately. But I think the PED players, there should be some resolution there over time. Mark McGwire came out, admitted his usage, and was welcomed back as a coach. Major League Baseball said, sure, you can coach. Hitting coach, bench coach with the Padres, with the Dodgers. He came back to the game. Scandal, not all scandals are created equally. I think that's something that, again, if you don't know the history as well of the game of baseball, it's going to be harder to understand some of those nuances. I once worked with someone who thought that the sign-stealing scandal was the worst scandal to ever rock the game of baseball. And here we are now, 4 years later, 3 years later, and I think we can all laugh at the sign-stealing scandal because we know everyone was doing it, just like PEDs. And when we look at the major players in the game, everyone except Carlos Beltran has been welcomed back. Alex Cora came back and took his old job from Boston. AJ Hinch, we're going to talk about him here in just a moment. He's managing the Detroit Tigers. He was welcomed back. Nothing major happened because of the sign-stealing scandal. It was an unfortunate, it was a black eye, but it's nowhere near the 1919 Black Sox scandal. The reverberations continue to be felt throughout the history of sports, still to this day. Stealing signs and cheating in different ways, that happens in all sports. It's unfortunate what happens, and when you get caught, you should get punished. But to somehow think that that is one of the worst things that ever happened to our game, it's not. We know that. Pete Rose is the example of why that is the worst thing you could do, is to bet on baseball, to bet on your sport. That's why he's not in the Hall of Fame. That's why he never will be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So very sad for Pete that he never really got that resolution that I think a lot of people wanted for him, more so than he wanted for himself. That's probably the saddest part. We all wanted it more than Pete did. So rest in peace to Pete Rose. I got a chance to meet him once, got his autograph, got him on a good day, didn't charge anything extra to have 4256 written on the baseball. And very sad. Very sad for Pete Rose and for the baseball community. All right, let's talk about the postseason picture. This is the first time since 2007 that both World Series teams from the prior year did not make the postseason. Texas Rangers and Arizona Diamondbacks, nowhere to be found. Both sitting at home come October 1st. Arizona had an opportunity to, but based on the results on Monday with the Mets winning the first game and Atlanta winning the second, the Diamondbacks lose out on the tiebreaker despite having the same record. So St. Louis and Detroit went to the World Series in 2006. Cardinals won, but they missed out in 2007. Same is true for the Rangers and Diamondbacks. This also was the first year since 2014 that we haven't had a 100-win team. This year's postseason is absolutely wide open. Any team that you suggest, despite the fact that it might not be a roster that looks as talented as those of the Dodgers and the Padres, they have a chance to win it. They have a chance, especially after last year when we had two teams that lost 100 games 2 years prior. It is anyone's month to seize the trophy. First round bye, you're not going to see over the next few days the Yankees or the Cleveland Guardians, along with the Dodgers and Phillies. They get a bye. Their series don't start until Saturday. We only have the game one starters right now for the postseason picture. In just a moment here, we're going to have the first game, Tigers against the Astros, AJ Hinch against his old club. That is a real fun matchup, a manager versus a team in a lot of ways. I think that bodes well for a very young Tigers squad who they don't really have to maybe deal with those dynamics quite as much as they would have if their manager wasn't the previous manager for the Houston Astros during that sign-stealing scandal. So a lot of this is going to be about Hinch versus Houston, and I think that can help the Tigers. Nevertheless, I think this is the Astros series to win. Jordan Alvarez, is hitting third in the lineup today. He's got a bad knee, but he's in there. One of the better pitching matchups of Tuesday, Framber Valdez versus Tarik Skubal. that's a good one going forward. I'm probably going to go ahead and take Houston in this series in two. It's going to be a quick one for Detroit. They should just be happy to be there. They're going to try to win, but they're going to be happy to be there. Also in the American League, Kansas City at Baltimore. For those of you that have been listening to me over on the Who's Better Baseball podcast, we've talked about it all season long. The two most exciting young shortstops in the game, Gunnar Henderson versus Bobby Witt Jr. I'm in the Bobby Witt Jr. camp. I actually think the Royals will win this series. I don't have enough guts to say it's going to be a two-game sweep for the Royals, so I think it's going to be Royals in three. Remember, Baltimore, despite the fact that they won the AL East last year and got that first round bye, they got swept by the Rangers in three games. So they have yet to win a postseason game with this roster of young players, and I do worry about that going forward if the Orioles might need to change up a little bit on the roster, on the coaching staff. They've got the talent. There's no doubt about it. The Orioles have a better team than the Royals. But I like the Royals right now, and I'm going to go ahead and pick them in three games. That pitching matchup is a solid one, too. Cole Reagan's the lefty against former Colorado Springs Sky Sox, Corbin Burns. And the Royals are the only team besides San Diego where we actually know what their rotation is going to be. It's going to be Reagan's, Seth Lugo, and then Michael Wacha going in game one, two, and if necessary, in game three. In the National League, Atlanta travels to San Diego. I'm going to take San Diego in three there. This is probably the closest matchup. I know Atlanta is probably running on fumes just a little bit after that doubleheader on Monday. And we'll wait to see what's going to happen with Chris Sale, if he's going to end up pitching in this series. It seems like he might not be available until the division series, but Atlanta has a battle-tested club of veterans, so it wouldn't surprise me if Atlanta ended up taking down San Diego, but I'm going to go ahead and take San Diego in three games. Game one, it's the late one tonight at 6:30 Mountain Standard Time. Michael King against TBD. We don't even know who's starting for Atlanta. Don't even know, but I think they're going to get one. And then at 3:30 this afternoon, Luis Severino for the Mets against Freddie Peralta, brother of left-handed Rockies reliever Luis Peralta. So that's a storyline if you want to go ahead and root for the Brewers, because Freddie is the brother of Luis. Go ahead and do that. I think that's a good matchup. David Stern's a guy who was the GM running the Brewers and helped create this, you know, really small market juggernaut that they've become now. He's over with the Mets now. He's making the big bucks. He's able to get the Mets into the postseason. So that'll be a good matchup to see going forward. And for San Diego, their rotation is going to be Michael King, Joe Musgrove, Dylan Cease in game three. Unless Atlanta wins that first game, then I could see Dylan Cease maybe moving up to get the start in game two, because it immediately becomes a must-win game. So best of three series over the next 3 days. So we could have in 36 hours, there's a team excited to play on Tuesday. They could be done by Wednesday afternoon. 36 hours, their season is over. It's a wild card round. That's it. They didn't win their division. One team did. One of those teams did. The Brewers in the National League, and then in the American League, the Houston Astros. But you didn't have the best record. You didn't have one of the two best records of the division winner. So that's postseason baseball in 2024. And quick rundown of some of the players where if you're looking to say, well, I don't know who I want to root for. Maybe I want to root for some former Rockies or some Colorado connections. Let me give you a rundown on some of those names. Only a couple notable ones that I think some fans out there will say, you know what, I'm going to root for this team because I did like this player when he was with Colorado. Houston has none. Houston Astros doesn't have anybody on the coaching staff, nobody on the roster that came through the Rockies organization at all. Baltimore doesn't either, but you do have Jackson Holliday there. So if you want to root for the son of Matt Holliday, you can root for Jackson Holliday. In the minors, they got a handful of guys. You might remember Forrest Wall. He was utilized in the 2018 trade of Sungwan Oh when they were going to the postseason. Brian Baker was a guy who ended up leaving the organization in the minors before making his debut elsewhere. And then Silas Ardois, the son of Danny Ardois. Excuse me, it's Ardway. But yeah, remember Danny Ardway, the catcher? His son Silas was a fourth-round pick in 2022 out of the University of Texas. He was actually drafted, Silas, also a catcher like his dad, was drafted by the Rockies in the 36th round of the 2019 draft out of high school. Nevertheless, did not sign, went to college, and was drafted by Baltimore. Kansas City's got a couple guys in the minors. You might remember Jacob Wallace. He went to Boston in 2020 in the Kevin Pillar deal. In the minors, Denelson Lamet is there. He's definitely not on the postseason roster, but if there's some injuries, maybe he ends up popping in. But Garrett Hampson's the one. Garrett Hampson's the guy where he's one of the last players still kicking around from 2018 as far as position players are concerned. He's still there. So if you were a Garrett Hampson fan, maybe you're going to root for the Kansas City Royals. In Detroit, the minor leaguers are PJ Pulin, Blair Calvo, who did debut with the Rockies in 2023. Bly Madris, he wasn't ever a Rocky, but he did play at Colorado Mesa University out there in Grand Junction. Ryan Vallade, not on the big league roster right now, not on the postseason roster, but did spend some time in the majors with the Detroit Tigers. So Ryan Vallade, maybe that moves the needle for you, and you're pulling for the Tigers. The National League actually has a lot more former Rockies. Isaac Collins, the utility player. You'll remember when the Rockies played the Brewers, me discussing a little bit about him, a utility player that was selected last December as a minor league Rule 5 draft pick by the Brewers. And then Joel Piamps, a player, again, came through the system with the Rockies, was let go, and finally was able to latch on. He's been really solid for the Brewers in the back end of their bullpen. San Diego has two of the more notable names, Jerickson Profar, the All-Star. Think about that. Gosh, yeah, that was this year, wasn't it? But former All-Star, current All-Star, Jerickson Profar, former Rocky, and Elias Diaz, right? Let go, finally was able to latch on with the Padres. I expect him to be on the postseason roster for them. The Mets, they got like 2.5. Jose Iglesias playing second base with Jeff McNeil out. Adam Ottavino in the back end of the bullpen. There's been some discussion that he might not make the postseason roster. We'll kind of wait and see what happens later on in the day when those rosters get announced. You do have Wyoming native Brandon Nimmo on the Mets, as well as Colorado native David Peterson. So if you want to root for some Colorado guys or some Rocky Mountain region players, maybe the Mets are the way that you go. But the team with the most former Rockies has to be Atlanta. Pierce Johnson, love the success that he's been having the last year and a half since he went down to Georgia. In the minors, Tyler Matzek, who was on the 40-man roster, was critical back in 2021 when Atlanta won it all. He's been banged up. He's down in the minors. He could be one of those players that gets called up if there are injuries throughout the postseason. Tommy Doyle, that's where he ended up going when he was booted off the 40-man roster last offseason. And then the coaching staff, there's three. You might not know Sal Fasano. He's been around for a while. He wasn't with the Rockies very much. Tom Goodwin wasn't around very much, but he made an impact in the year 2000. He stole 39 bases in only 91 games for the Colorado Rockies. But what you definitely know is former manager of the Rockies from 2013 to 2016. I think I got my dates right. Walt Weiss on the bench as a coach for Atlanta. So if you're looking for those players that were former Rockies to help influence who you root for, those are a couple of those guys. Reach out and let me know on social media, who are you pulling for in this postseason? A lot of underdogs that you could definitely root for in October. Who is the one that you are choosing as your backup team, as it were? Let me know on Twitter, X, Threads, at Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, as well as at Rockies _ Insider. Appreciate you sticking around. Gigster, I see you in there. Thanks for reaching out on social media. My DMs are open, so if you want to reach out, talk, get the lowdown on whatever is going on, hit me up. DMs are most definitely open. So appreciate you sticking around. Give me this momentum. But as I like to say, that momentum, it can only be as good as my next show. So I will talk to you then on my next show.